All right, here we go. Overdrive off and running. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, your home smart speaker, and up on TSN 2 all afternoon. Brian Hayes and the O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill.
And Al's brother,
who will be playing a prominent role in the show today. I have a lot to ask both of you now that we're about 48 hours removed, 72 hours removed from the race heard and seen around the world. Noodles was supposed to be on today, but because of the COVID rescheduling of every NHL game, basically, especially up here, he's calling a game now tonight. He wasn't supposed to be calling a game tonight, and I get the impression like that's going to be a big part of the NHL's protocol over the next couple of weeks, is trying to figure out how they're going to slot every game in
protocol
between now and the end of the year.
Honestly, Hayes, how do the Vancouver Canucks come back and play again this year?
They're claiming that they can figure this out. I read this afternoon that the NHL is confident, quote-unquote, that they can work it out to get them back on the ice.
Don't you think they're 2 weeks away from even being able to enter a building?
I think so.
Yeah. Their playoffs are starting in a month and a half. How the hell are they going to be able to do anything? I don't know what they're going to do with that situation.
It's clearly going to come down to how they all react, how they overcome the virus. I mean, I'm sure there are a number of guys on the team based on reports that are asymptomatic. They've tested positive, but they're just sitting at home and they're quarantining. But by all accounts, there's some guys who are really struggling and really taking issue with this and having issues with it. So when do they get to return? And if you're going to bring up the taxi squad or the American Hockey League team with quarantining rules, and what is that going to do for the integrity of the competition if you're basically an American Hockey League team?
No.
I don't know how that's going to work.
That's why I said, like, I just, when I look at the Vancouver Canucks situation out there, I don't know how they can come back and play. I would think they would have to consider, but what do? Do you give every team that had a game against Vancouver a loss? Like, what do you?
No, that's a good question. I guess they must have some sort of playbook for this that they've at least decided they might have to use. There's no playbook from the past. Right? We've never been through a pandemic that has rolled into a second season. So they don't really have a playbook for a team just being shut down completely. But I would assume, and we can find this out, and we will at some point, I'm sure, over the next couple of days with the insiders trying to break this news, but there might just be a cap on the amount of games every team plays across the country. Or if you feel like you can get close to 56, maybe there's uneven numbers and it's based on points percentage. But I think a luxury that the league has in terms of the overall reaction, not the TV partners, not the media partners, because that's important here too, right? TSN, Sportsnet, there's a lot of different companies here who are like, we have games planned and we have revenue at stake here. Clearly COVID and all that kind of stuff is the priority. But if you can play, I would think the priority will be to try to play. But there is clearly a difference between the top four teams and the bottom three. Like, Calgary is out. They are done. They're awful. They are finished. They look like they're ready to pack up their bags. Vancouver is worse. And what are they going to be thinking when they come back from this? And Ottawa's been out really since the hop. So I don't think it's going to be as big of an issue in terms of the blowback that the league might return if you had teams that were really being affected by a playoff race. Toronto, Edmonton, Winnipeg, and Montreal, that's your playoffs.
And it's over. What Calgary was happened. Up to, by the way, what Calgary was up to last night is beyond me. They had a Toronto team that went in there, didn't have their best through 40 minutes, didn't really find their best the whole night, and Calgary lays an egg like that? Like, come on. You got Hutchison and Nett? You would think they would be buzzing and trying to dominate that game. They had nothing. They were terrible.
Well, they got a bit of a boost when Daryl Sutter took over. They started 3-0 with him behind the bench.
I believe they are 2-8 since.
Yeah, and clearly the Daryl Sutter coaching change bump is over, if it ever really happened at all. And they are done. They're out of it. Like, the Leafs are, what are the Leafs, 18 points up on them with a game in hand? And now Toronto has, again, built a bit of a gap here. They've leaped ahead of Edmonton and Winnipeg and Montreal. But Calgary, I guess they got the message the first three games with Daryl Sutter, but there's nothing about that team.
No,
that
nobody's playing
out.
Good. No,
nothing.
Like, going into this game tonight, if I were to touch on something in the pregame, watch out for this guy for Calgary, like Mangiapane or something. Like, I don't know.
That's about it, though. That's it. You're talking about guys in the third or fourth line that bring a little bit of
They
jump.
Got nothing on. They're
they
done. You're right. They're done.
They're done. And now you got to wonder big picture what they're going to do out in Calgary, because you've hired Daryl Sutter.
Yeah, he's there for two more after this one.
You're committed to him. You're committed to his style of play and how he wants to operate. And I don't see a lot of talent on that team. Like, even Matthew Tkachuk is a lost cause right now. I don't even notice him.
I said last night in the quiz, I thought he would be a top 10 scorer in the league this year, Brian. Top 10 scorer in the league. But it goes, he just doesn't look right. He doesn't look right under Sutter. He hasn't looked right all year. And I don't know. I wouldn't want to be dealing with that mess out there, because they're in no man's land right now.
Yeah, they are really in a difficult spot, because they're committed to the goalie in Markstrom.
Well, that's what Tree did. He went out and got the goaltender. He went out and got Tanev, help on the defense. And it's like, okay, fellas, here we go. We're ready. I think they were a couple of years ago first in the West.
They were. Yep.
And it's like, let's get back to that form. Now we have a goalie. We don't have to worry about that anymore. And, wow, they fell flat in their face this year.
Yeah, they did. And it's over. Like, the white flag is out. They're done. They're not catching Montreal, let alone Edmonton, Winnipeg, or Toronto. It's over. So I think to get back to the original point about Vancouver, which is completely unknown. I mean, who knows what's going to happen over the next week or two. But I think most people can concede in Calgary, in Vancouver, in Ottawa, it's over. Like, you're done. You weren't making it anyway, and you're not making it now. The four teams in the country have determined who are going to punch their ticket. It's just a matter of how it plays out, you know, who finishes 1 through 4. And the Leafs last night, I agree with you. I thought they had a good start, and then from about 10 minutes into the first until about the third period, they were just kind of there. And it was almost as if they were waiting for Edmonton or Calgary to determine how this was going to be played. And what I will give them a lot of credit for, and we keep talking about this litmus test and searching for it and trying to find different ways to analyze this team based on past years and based on other competition throughout the league, I think the way they played after getting that lead is a real sign of maturity and a real sign of how good they are. Because when they went up 3-2, it was over.
That's right.
There was nothing. They didn't give up anything.
And you just think about this trip as a whole. I don't know if they had their best games in Winnipeg. They won two. And I definitely don't think they had their best game in Calgary. But they're picking up wins where in the past they would have got dummied in those games. Especially with the backup goaltender, then the four-string goaltender in net. You're like, oh, God, what the hell's going to go on here? But you can tell the quality team. Even Austin Matthews, I touched on him last night, where it's like he didn't have his best game. Like, he was terrible last night. But you know what? He came through and got the insurance goal at the end, and that's what great players do when they got their B-minus game. They don't just say, I just don't have it. He contributed. And I don't care. People might just say, oh, he just scored a goal. That was a big goal to make sure that that game was over.
Yeah, it was. That was the go-ahead.
Sure. That just puts the nail in the coffin, and it's like, this game is over now. So good on him for having that, and the whole team. It's like, we can win. You don't want to fall into the trap to say, well, we can just kind of see what happens out there and we'll somehow find a way to win. They haven't even got firing, and I think they've sent a message to their GM that they're dialed and ready. If you want to make a move and help us get better, go ahead.
Well, and Dubas had some interesting comments on Friday night when he was asked about it, like what is specifically the high-end prospects in the organization. Nick Robertson up front, Rasmus Sandin on the back end. And I think we have this audio, but I've been trying to decipher what this means in terms of the trade deadline, in terms of what he's basically telling us in terms of who's available and what they're willing to pay for it. Because Dubas was asked about, you know, the high-end prospects and how the rest of this year is going to play out as we get closer to the trade deadline. And here's what he said over the weekend.
I would say that it's all on the table for us at this point, but if we're going to move one of the higher end guys, I would say it would need to be an extremely significant deal, but we're not opposed to it, and we'll see it how everything evolves as we lead up to April 12th and see how our team continues to evolve in terms of performance and in terms of health, because that's going to be a huge factor as we get towards the deadline and try to improve our team.
So, you know, he's obviously pointing out, If you offer something up massive that they're really, really a believer in and probably not a rental, then maybe one of those two guys would be a part of the program. But he also went on, I think, to suggest that they could be guys that could factor into the stretch run here, you know, and could be guys that maybe get a taste towards the end of the year and into the playoffs.
I think it would be awfully difficult for those two young kids to come up and make a statement and kind of help this team move forward. I don't know what their role would be.
Well, based on where they are right now, it's difficult to see that because they've got points in seven straight. They're winning games. There's no rhyme or reason for picking out a spot and saying this has to be upgraded. But when you think of cup-winning teams throughout history, generally there is at least that one kid who shows up and really supplies something. And you don't know what's going to happen between now and the end of the year. There's an injury or two.
I know, but they don't have like that Tyler Seguin kid or whatever. I don't see one of those two being that type of...
I don't think they're going to be high-impact guys. But let's say Dermott gets injured, using him as an example. He's the guy, I think, right on the border. Would you prefer Sandin or Martin Morenson?
I would prefer Sandin.
I think I would prefer Sandin.
Everybody kind of hates on Martin Morenson, but for some reason, the last couple of years, he's grown on me. As that sixth guy that goes in there, he has some length to him. He can be a pain in the ass. He gets his stick in the lanes, kill penalties. Like, I don't hate him as much as everybody else in this town.
I think it's that he's always somehow finding a new year and a new lease on life here in Toronto. That's the point. It's like he's a depth
guy. God forbid
guy.
We supported that in Toronto. Like, people hate that guy's Gus. It's like...
No, he's fine. He's fine as a guy, to your point, that comes in for a few games here or there, kills some penalties, gets the puck out, moves on with his life.
I know. He does have nine lives, I will admit that, and people are like, you're still here?
That's it. That's the whole point. That's the reaction, and I have the exact same one. Every single year in the offseason, Martin Morenson, one-year deal, $700,000, and I'm like, okay, they're not even going to try anything new. Like, he's like a furniture piece now that you stop paying attention, and he just happens to be there for 10 years. And you're like, yeah, I don't know. It works. Like, it was, we put it in the corner a decade ago, and it's still there. But I'm just painting you a picture here in terms of a scenario where I could see Keith saying, maybe Sandin. Like, the development of Sandin has been very unique. Like, a first-round pick, a guy who showed up at camp that first year, and the expectations exploded immediately because you thought, wow, this guy's got a shot. To begin last year, he started with the team, and then COVID shut it down. And now COVID has affected his season this year. He's had some injury problems, but it's not like he's 18. Yeah. You know, like, he's into his 20s now. He's been playing pro hockey for a long time. He's playing pro hockey in Sweden. He's been playing with the Marlies for a couple of years. I can't say I've placed eyes on him to know exactly where he is
right
now. No
idea where he's at, but I will tell you the difference. Tampa Bay last year, Brian, their guys that were coming in and out were guys like Shen and Bogosian, who was in the lineup every night. Those were the guys that were flip-flopping coming out of, in and out of the lineup. It wasn't Sandin or Martin Morenson, and that could be the difference.
The Leafs don't have those guys.
No, like,
now, maybe they acquire them at the trade deadline, but, you know, I think it's a scenario where the Leafs realize maybe the market isn't going to be there. It's not, you know, I think there's a lot of potential buyers. I don't know how many sellers there are. And I think at this point their team is rolling in a decent direction.
Yeah, and ultimately
direction.
Who cares who it is coming in? If it is Sandin, if it is a kid instead of a Luke Shen, someone's got to go in there and do the job.
Got
to
get the job done.
That's
yeah.
it.
Like, you're going to the playoffs.
No, there's
you
don't show the driver's license before you step on the ice in the Stanley Cup playoffs. It's just go and do the job.
We get a trade in the NFL. This one is a pretty significant one, and it basically tells you what's going to happen at the NFL draft. Scheffler tweeting out that the Jets are trading your boy, Sam Darnold, to the Carolina Panthers for a 2021 sixth-round pick and a second and a fourth-round pick in 2022. So three total picks. None of them are first-round picks for Sam Darnold. He's off the Carolina. Teddy Bridgewater is still there and on term. I don't know what that means for his future in Carolina. But that's basically indicating what we always knew was happening here. The Jets are taking a quarterback at two.
Yeah.
So Lawrence is going one. It sounds like Zach Wilson will likely go two. The Niners traded up to take a quarterback at three. And the question becomes, who does Atlanta take at four? Do they stay? Do they take a quarterback? Do they trade out and someone moves up and takes another quarterback? And then of all this discussion, which one turns into the next Sam Darnold? Because Darnold went third overall, and now all of a sudden he's a bust. And that's going to happen with this
NFL.
I'm
not totally quitting on the idea that Sam Darnold could turn it around somewhere else. I don't know if it's Carolina or he actually moves on somewhere else. But try being in that cesspool in New York with the Jets and that team. Like, for any young quarterback, I don't know who could have survived that or succeeded there, to be honest with
you. It's the chicken or the egg. Was it him or was it the fact that he had nothing around him?
Or Gase or all of it.
Absolutely. I don't dispute that. He's still very young, too. Like, he stepped into the NFL, I think he was just turned 21. He'd only be 23, 24 years old. So he's still a young guy. He still has talent.
I think he won his first or second game, and everyone was like, look at this guy. And then just...
he had so much hype. And that's all I'm saying here is I'm not going to end his career just because he's moved on to Carolina. The point is, you look at it, when the Jets took him, there's your savior. There's your guy. That's the next great QB for the next 15 years. 3 years later, you're out, and we're going to take the next guy who we're now going to promote as the savior of the Jets. And it's just, it's a three-ring circus, and it goes around and goes around and goes around, and there are going to be three quarterbacks taken with the first three picks. I wouldn't be shocked if a fourth quarterback goes at the fourth pick, and you know they're not all going to pan out. Like, chances are, based on history, one will turn into a superstar, one will turn into a really good quarterback, one will be just okay, and the other one will barely ever play and disappear. Mm-hmm. Like, that's just the nature of the beast with the NFL draft. Meanwhile, all these teams are moving up, and they think they've got the guy. So
yeah, all the interviews and all the way these kids pump up their own tires, nobody can ever predict who can deal with it and who can't.
Exactly. Who's really got it, who doesn't. Like, college football, there's only so much tape. You know, you only play so many games. Like, as a starter, you get guys who play, you know, 15 starts, 17 starts, 20 starts. Remember Mark Sanchez, who came out of USC just like Darnold did. I think he only had like 12 starts or something in college, and he went fifth overall.
What about Linehart? He didn't turn out to be much either, did he?
No, he was a bust, but he played a lot in college. Like, there was more tape on him.
Oh, he was the man.
He was the man. Him and Reggie Bush, and that was when Pete Carroll was there. They were the kings of college football. But it's difficult to scout. You know, there's only so much data you have, only so many game tapes you have. But there you have it. The Jets have moved on from Sam Darnold. So he's gone to Carolina. What that means for Teddy Bridgewater, I guess we'll find out. And the Panthers, but the Jets, they have the number two pick. We're 24 days away from the draft, I believe, and we know they're taking a quarterback at two. So quarterback at one, quarterback at two, quarterback at three, and the draft starts at four with Atlanta.
Imagine being that fan base with the Jets. It's like, okay, we got our future quarterback. We're going to be dialed in like every organization. He's going to be the one moving us forward. Then all of a sudden, what is it, 3 years?
Yeah, you're out.
Three years, and then we have to start again.
Yeah. That's exactly what they're doing. They're going to likely take Zach Wilson, a project,
yeah.
You know. Who's...
That's why, like in hockey right now, all these teams, it's like Buffalo tanking or whatever, just brutal teams. I'm like, there's not Austin Matthews or McDavid or anybody, I don't think so, that's available exactly in the next.
Not this draft.
So
not that
it's
I've
like, go ahead and be bad, but it's not like the savior's coming.
No.
No one's going to be organizationally changing everything with the selection. It's just, it's not out there. It's not out there.
I don't believe it's out there this year. I know that Shane Wright kid is highly touted. There's some exceptional status in the WHL who's like leading the WHL in points, but he's 15.
Yeah, he's not getting drafted
Bedard.
For 3 years.
Yeah, he's 3 years down the road. So what, are you going to tank with the plan of getting the top pick in 2024? I mean, that's clearly not even possible. It's not ideal and it's not possible. So the Leafs are back in action tonight. We'll tee up the game throughout the afternoon. They had a win last night, win on Friday, points in seven straight. They had that dip before that, but now they're moving back up.
They're dialed in,
and another gap between them and Edmonton, Winnipeg, and Montreal. So there's a lot to get into with the NHL. Some big golf news in a massive golf week. You got the green jacket. Is that the green suit?
No, I don't have the green suit. I thought about pulling one out, but it's pretty sad in this day and age. Like, I was just like, I don't want to see Twitter. Like, I got a nice... It's a cool green, and I'm like, I'm just not doing it. I don't want to deal with people saying, it's a stupid jacket. You probably being one of them. But...
No, I'm a fan of the green suit. That's why it looks like it. That's what you're wearing. I can't tell the tint from here. But
blue, pal.
All right, so we'll get into Masters Week and what happened over the weekend and what it might mean for this upcoming week. Al's brother's going to be lurking. We'll get him in. You guys can both kind of take us through how you've been feeling all weekend.
Have you been to the club yet, the range?
I hit the range, and I went there this morning with Everly, my daughter, and I can't tell you how busy it is, the range. Like, I can't tell. People lined up just to find a slot on the range. There are so many people out there hitting balls. Golf courses, it's going to be impossible.
It is. It's going to be a circus, man.
Impossible.
It's the only thing for the second summer you can do.
Yeah. That's it. Like, even with the gray lockdown, whatever the hell we're in right now, golf is totally allowed. Everyone can golf. Ranges, you can go hit balls, you can do whatever you want, and it's a packed house. And I've been searching some tee sheets just to find out, like, not necessarily to book anything, just to see what might be available. Nothing. Like, there's nothing available.
Dude, I'm telling you, you're going to get dialed into the 7 a.m. tee time. It's the only way to do it.
I love it. I love it. But you have about 2 months to do that. You have July and August, maybe. Like, mid-June to about mid-August, maybe, where you could play that. And then the sun doesn't come up quick enough, or it's too damp or whatever. Anyway, we'll look into the golf week. It's a big one with the Masters ongoing. Coverage all week here on TSN 1050 and, of course, on CTV and TSN. Iced Tea is coming up. We talked to Stone Cold last week. Iced Tea was in the Tide commercial with them. We're going to catch up with Iced Tea. This is going to be hilarious. Ray's coming up. He'll have the call tonight. Marcellus Wiley on the Sam Darnold deal. There's a lot to get into in the NFL. A lot of golf news, some tennis news as well from the weekend. And the Jays take 2 of 3 at Yankee Stadium. We'll get into that as well. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. All right, Ray Ferraro will join us just after 5 o'clock. He'll have the call tonight. Leafs Flames on TSN 4. Noodles calling a game tonight. All 6 Canadian teams in action tonight outside of Vancouver. And, again, we have no idea when Vancouver's going to be back, how it's all going to play out, what their schedule will look like. This was a big one. I mean, COVID clearly wiped through the room, and it's affected family members out there. It's a really tough scene out in Vancouver. So we'll catch up with Ray from Calgary just after 5 o'clock. Iced Tea will join us here in a moment. And catch up with him on shooting a Tide commercial with Stone Cold, his whole career.
He played like that. Wasn't he on Law & Order or something like that?
He still is. He's been on there for 20 years. Law & Order, SUV, he has been on there for 20 years. More than that, like since the year 2000. I guess they're in season 22, I think it is. Like that Law & Order show, there are so many spinoffs of Law & Order. The original, it has made so much money. And clearly they have such a massive following. I still watch it. My wife watches it all the time.
Yep.
And it's always the same story, effectively. But it's still compelling. You know how it's going to play out. You know where it's going. You kind of know that, like, whoever you see early in the episode, you're like, that's the guilty guy, or that, you know, she did something or whatever. You try to solve it. And generally by the end of it, you have.
I want to just ask
it's still
him,
compelling.
I want to just ask him about the transition, like, he was in the rap game, and then just did someone call him up and say, hey, do you want to star in this, like, this crime drama? And then he just start doing it? Is it like Timberlake where you just do something and you're awesome at it? Maybe there's hope for us. We could transition. Me, you, and Noodles, detectives. Who doesn't want to start that show?
I think there's potential there, and he was in a great movie called New Jack City with Wesley Snipes.
That's an old flick, dude.
Old flick, man. That would have been early 90s. And that was when he really, I think, kind of broke through as an actor. And he's done a bunch of different acting gigs with movies and stuff like that. But he's been on Law & Order SUV for 20 years. Like, what a gig. You get on a show like that, and you're locked in, and you're a big part of it, and he's a primary character. Just send the scripts. Send them. Lock it in. I'll see you next year. Although it's got to be tough, I would think, now, like with COVID and Hollywood and everything like that. It's difficult to shoot. It's probably really difficult to come together and how you handle it and stuff. But Law & Order SUV has been around forever, and Ice-T has been a big part of it for 20 years. And as we mentioned, he and Stone Cold Steve Austin shot a really cool commercial, and Tide is on a mission to get consumers to switch off the default mode of hot when it comes to their laundry and wash on cold. Tide is calling for everyone to join the hashtag turn to cold movement and make cold water washing the standard for all Canadians. And here he is, a longtime member of the music industry, the acting industry, and now the Tide industry. Here is Ice-T. What's up, Ice-T?
Hey, what's up, boss? How you doing?
We're doing pretty well. Take us through that experience. What's it like to shoot a commercial with Stone Cold Steve Austin?
Well, you know what it is? It's like, they'll call you about a commercial, and the first thing you want to do is see if it's a fit, you know? At some point, they kind of pitch commercials at you. They figure you got a name. And they hit me with Tide, and I was like, what do I got to do with Tide? You know?
We know.
And even though I've been using Tide my whole life, you know, that's what I've had, you know, my whole life, but I just didn't get it. So they started saying the stuff about cold water and how it's better and it doesn't shrink the clothes or this and that, and it's better for the environment. I still wasn't getting it. Then I got it at the end. I'm like, oh, it's ice, cold water. And then they said, and you're going to be working with Stone Cold Steve Austin. I said, I'm in. So that's all it took to hook me to get a chance to meet one of my idols and work with him. And I think they came off with a clever commercial. It's kind of funny. And, you know, turned out to be a good look. I haven't gotten any negative response from it, you know, so we rocking with it.
We were talking about the transition earlier. You were in the rap game, and then how did you get into the acting game? Was that just something where somebody wanted to cast you and you said, yeah, I'll give it a shot? No lessons, no nothing. You just said, I'll do it, and you were awesome at it, and the rest is history? Or how did it all come about?
Kind of happened with the movie New Jack City. And at that time, there just wasn't a real bunch of young black actors. Wesley Snipes had only done Major League, and, you know, She's Gotta Have It. There wasn't a lot of, I think, Jungle Fever. And they decided, hey, these guys have sold millions of records. Maybe it'll work. So they went to me, got me. They got Chris Rock, who was like the youngest, like, rawest comedian off the street at the time. And they tried to put this movie together, hoping that my record sales would translate to box office. And I was scared to death. I mean, they wanted me to play the police. That year I was dropping an album called Original Gangster. I was like, wait a minute, hold up.
Right.
What's going on?
Well, that's what we're saying. Like, your history, you mentioned that album, which really, you know, put you on the map and was a monster for you. Mm-hmm. And you play a cop in New Jack City. You play a cop for 20 years in Law and Order. You know, like, how did you pull this off? Because clearly it's been working for you.
You know what it is? People understand acting. A lot of people, some people don't, but most people with any greater intelligence, they dig it. They understand that you're acting, and they roll with the punches. They just love seeing somebody they like doing something. So it's not like I'm a real cop. I've never arrested anybody in my life. But, you know, just to see somebody they grew up with acting out a part that they dig. And it's kind of cool because with Special Victims Unit, I mean, we're after rapists and pedophiles. They don't even like them in prison. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So it's kind of like, if I got to play a cop, that's a cop that nobody has a problem with. And I've just been fortunate, man. I got on that show to do 4 episodes, and now we're on our 22nd season.
We're chatting with Ice-T. Well, take us through the magic of Law & Order, because there have been so many spinoffs from the original. You mentioned you're on Law & Order SVU. And it's been around for 20 years, and it's still doing incredible numbers and has an incredible following. What's the magic sauce here? Why do you think it works so well, and how do you keep it compelling for 20 years?
Well, for me, for my little journey, this is the 5th show I've done with Dick Wolf. I started coming on playing a bad guy on New York Undercover. Then I did a show called Swift Justice. I played a bad guy. Then I was on the Law & Order movie, Exiled. I was a pimp. They killed me with a bowling pin. Then I had a show called Players with Costas Mandalore and Frank Hughes. And then I got the call to do this show. I wasn't really excited to do the show. Honestly, I was running a record label. I was trying to invent iTunes in L.A. And they called me to do the show. And, you know, they were like, come on, 4 episodes. Dick Wolf loves you. His check's clear. You know, I was like, yep. All right, you know, and who would have thought I was going to get on something like this that just would go forever? I think what makes this show stick is, first off, it's a whodunit. Everyone loves a whodunit. So Law & Order, you get to kind of be a detective along with us. But the second part is that these are survivors. The people on our show haven't died. A lot of the women that have gone through this traumatic, you know, life experience, they might see justice on our show where they didn't see justice in real life. So in a way, it's a lot of therapy going on in this show. So I didn't know that for this first year or so till people started walking up to me saying, thank you, thank you. I'm like, what? And then I got it that, you know, this show has a real impact.
We're a couple radio stiffs that dabble in television. Well, we're basically on television. Our radio show is. Do you think we should start dipping our toe? Like, could we get into acting?
Sure.
Detectives just throw our name in the hat and say, give us a shot?
Sure. I mean, you know what I'm saying. Acting is just lying convincingly. That's all acting is. You know?
That's a good tip.
You probably got a lot of experience acting and don't know it. People ask me, where'd you learn how to act? I'm like standing in front of a judge. So
you could
do it. It's an acquired skill, but I'm sure you could do it. It's not... I'm not going to say you're going to wake up and be Daniel Day-Lewis, but, you know, you can pull it off.
We're chatting with Ice-T, Grammy Award-winning rapper, actor, songwriter, and producer. What about, everyone's world has been turned upside down with COVID and different protocols. How does this work? I mean, how has your day-to-day been thrown off? You're obviously a guy that's got a lot on the go. What's your life like considering what's going on with COVID?
Well, it started off last year in March when they shut the show down. And I was like, okay, well, we'll just go out and tour with Body Count. And they shut our tour schedule down in Europe. We lost at least $3 to $4 million on touring that summer that we were supposed to make being safe because they shut all the festivals down globally.
Right.
And I was like, okay. So every time I thought I was going to be able to, keep hustling, they would shut it down. Then they shut that down. So I'm sitting in Arizona doing nothing, like twiddling my thumbs for the first time in years. And I never forget, I was talking to one of my business partners, and he's like, what if they don't work for a year or two? And I was like, wow, I'm not even prepared for that. So they brought us back in September. They've got heavy protocols. Fortunately, we came back. We COVID test every day. They temperature check us twice a day, and we're masked all day. We rehearse with the masks on, and then when they say roll camera, we pull them off, and shoot the scene. Even fans, some of them are like, well, you should have the mask on, but I'm like, you don't want to watch a show where you can't see the people talk. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So we got to suspend reality a little bit for that, but. It's how it's done, and that's how we have to work right now until we get some kind of solution for this problem that the world is going through.
Well, I've noticed that, like my wife and I, we watch the show religiously, and we talk about the mask placement all the time because, in one scene you're walking into a room with the mask, and then you start talking, you don't have the mask on, right? But to your point, it's acting, like it's a show.
It's difficult. And we, we didn't plan on starting the season with COVID, but we wanted to reflect what was really going on. But it's difficult. When we do have the masks off, everybody is checked. We've already been, well screened and checked, but it's hard. It's hard. You either act like COVID doesn't exist or you try to split the line and show it. It's just hard, Bear with us. We're trying to
Absolutely.
Do the best we can.
No, we're just happy there's new material. Like, I'm sure you get mm-hmm. that response all the time, right? Like the Hollywood and music, in a lot of ways, just kind of shut down with the rest of the world. And now you're starting to get some fresh shows and fresh music and fresh material. And I think people are starting to really get back into it and appreciate it, which I'm sure you hear that stuff all the time.
Everybody's just trying to do the best they can, I feel bad because there's people that haven't been to work since March.
Right.
I'm just fortunate my job kicked back in. You know what I'm saying? But the music industry, they're saying that we won't be able to go back and do concerts till 2022. So, you guys mentioned we got the Grammy this year for Body Count. We dropped an album and we have not been able to do one show. Everybody's dealing with it, but it's all relative. Some people are taking it hard. There's people that can't pay their rent. You know what I'm saying? So who am I to complain?
Well, yeah, exactly. And we're in a similar spot. We've been doing the show from home for a year, and mm-hmm. and it just the show rolls on. There's not much we can do about it. That's what comes with the territory at this point. We're chatting mm-hmm. with Ice-T. What's that like playing live? I mean, you've been doing it obviously for a long time, but if you get a great crowd. And let's say you're up here in Toronto, you're at the amphitheater, you're outside, it's a summer night, place is hopping. How would you compare that energy to anything else you've done?
There's nothing like it in the world. I've done a lot of things, but there's with, there's nothing like, you know, when everybody says, oh, yo, you know, you're a rock star or rock. They always say that term, rock star. There's nothing like it. That's why they always say, wow. They use that as a word, like, oh, he's a rock star. Because when you step on that stage and you've got thousands of people out there and they're like in the palm of your hand, and you say something like, I just want to get a glass of water, and they scream just because you want to drink some water, you like, wow. It's like being king of the world for that minute, you know?
Yep.
And you usually are in front of people that love you. You're not in front of an audience that doesn't want to see you. They paid to see you. So you're in a very strange place where you're in front of people that love you. And like we performed in the UK, we were in front of 120,000 people, you know, at the Download Festival. It's insane. The energy is ridiculous.
He is a musician and actor, Ice-T, and again, a big part of the Turn to Cold Tide campaign. And we've been rolling that commercial and talking about you and Stone Cold for the past few days. It's really cool. Like, it's really cool. And obviously, you're all in, right? You're all in on this.
Stone Cold is the coolest person. You know what I'm saying? It's, you know, they always say don't meet your idols because they might let you down. Well, this was different, you know? I already knew he's badass. You know what I'm saying? I'm watching him. You know, it's crazy because Coco's father is named Steve Austin, you know?
No way.
So, yeah, so, you know, but Stone Cold is big. I met him. I'm like, okay, you're a big dude. All right, I get it. And then when we started chopping it up, it was just really natural. I actually did his show. He has a show, Steve Austin's show, and I actually did that after the commercial because we kicked it off so cool. So, you know, I mean, it's like you basically got two alpha males. We're either going to become friends or try to kill each other, one of the two.
Well, let's see where it goes. We'll see if there's a commercial 2.0 in the future. But it's a really cool campaign, and it's been really great catching up with you.
Do a buddy movie.
Yeah, exactly. That's the next stage. That's where you guys need to take it. It's a buddy movie. There's a lot of potential in that. It's been great having you on. Continued success. Good luck with all this, and hopefully we get a chance to do it again down the road. Thank you for this.
Thanks for all the support, guys. I appreciate it.
You got it. There he is, Ice-T. That is that's pretty cool. We haven't had him on before, and his career, his life is pretty incredible.
Legend, man.
Yeah, legend. Came on the scene long time ago, 30 years ago, and like you said, New Jack City is a great movie, and he's been on Law & Order for 20 years, and he's still pumping out music, still touring, pretty good. He's got a reality show, everything, so he's not stopping anytime soon, clearly, so that was pretty cool. Thanks again to Ice-T. We had Stone Cold on last week. We're hitting everything here. You can't label this show. We'll go wherever the wind takes us. That's where we go. Ray Ferraro in about 20 minutes. Leafs Flames tonight. We'll tee that up with him, get his take on the game last night. Marcellus Wiley on the Sam Darnold deal. Darnold has been traded from New York to Carolina for multiple picks. So we'll see what he makes of that, what it means for the draft, what it means for Teddy Bridgewater down in Carolina. There's a lot to get into. Jays action, Raptors action. They're back in action tonight. We'll tee that up. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. All right, Ray will join us in about 20 minutes. Leafs Flames tonight, back on TSN 4. And it's been about 72 hours since you and Al's brother ran your 40, jumped your vertical. And I can't tell you how many people sending me videos of either themselves running the 40, their kids running the 40. I had like both my nephews clocked in today. Owen was at like 7 seconds. Lucas was at 9. My daughter ran it in about 8.5. My youngest.
There's been some numbers that are not flattering. Like small children should not be posting numbers better than us.
They are. It's happening.
I understand
it's
that.
It's not good.
I understand that. But I will say this. We are going to take a break and train. We might post a teaser video in about a month. But a month after that, we have the 100 and 200 scheduled. Okay? It's not going to be today. We said we might fire something up today. But you can't overdo it, right? You can't flood the...
No, it's been 3 days.
You got to let that breathe. But we're going to have a little teaser when it warms up here. Possibly a tribute to Rocky training. And we're going to tease the 100 and 200 meter.
Okay, so you speak for yourself and Al's brother, I'm assuming. I'm sure Al's brother is there in the booth. You're probably looking at him right now. Does he look like a new man after the 40 and the vert?
No.
Okay.
But it's weird getting messages like my cell phone. Eric Lindros and Paul Coffey, like a message saying, you lost to Al's brother. And I'm like, these guys are like Hall of Fame hockey players.
Right.
And like Stage and everybody, it's like all of my ex-teammates, they're like, they refer to him as Al's brother. They're like, you lost to Al's brother. I'm like, that is correct. That's correct.
Yeah, the video's right there. We saw it. It's a shock. It's a shock to the system. Like, I have had a number of people send me notes just saying, I'm actually really surprised that O lost Al's brother. Nothing against Al's brother, but he's not a former professional athlete, you know. But I thought your comment last night on the panel was very accurate. Like, you're slow out of the gates. That's what you got to work on. You were way too slow out of the gates. Once you got humming,
I think
it was
your commentary
okay.
Watching it live was a little unnecessary. You were like, something like, oh my God, out of the gates, horrendous.
I was shocked how slow you were to start.
Oh,
like, really, really shocked to see how slow you were the first 20 yards.
Dude, you can ask Al's brother. I literally got out of the truck, took my jacket off, and in my defense, my hip flexors, groins, really tight. And I couldn't get loose. I couldn't get moving.
That is the difference. I mean, you can speak to this when you're playing, right? Like, some nights you just have skating nights where you feel amazing.
You
like
can
your body
skate forever,
perfect.
And you're faster than everyone else.
Yeah, and then there are nights where you're like, it feels like I can't go. Like, I've got a rope around my waist, and someone's pulling me back. But,
see,
listen,
out of the gate there, that's tough.
That's the issue, right? That's hip flexors, that's hammies.
And my quads. Shins.
Shins.
My shins and my calves were really tight. There's my support system, Al's brother there.
Al's brother. He looks like he's supporting you. Okay, so just so we clarify this, because people want to know, 2 months from today, we're going to run the 100 and the 200.
Yes.
That's our plan?
Yes.
So beginning of June, basically.
That is correct.
Right before the cup final starts. No, the cup final didn't start until July.
Yeah.
So right before... I don't know, what would that be, around the U.S. Open, I guess, or maybe the U.S. Open a little bit later in June. But needless to say, my birthday, June 6th, D-Day. D-Day it is.
Something around there, but we will post, I'm going to produce a teaser. So get ready for that.
I look forward to that. How about your boy Jordan Spieth winning the Valero Texas Open? And I don't like that he won that tournament because I don't think he's going back-to-back. Like, everyone is hammering Spieth at the Masters. Apparently Vegas, I think he shot up to the top of the board. So much money was coming in on him because when he was rocking, when he was in his prime, he dummied this course. Like, he did.
Yeah.
He owned it.
In a different way, but he dummied it.
He absolutely did. He won it, and it seemed like every year he was the leader in the clubhouse after 18, after 36. I think he finished T2 twice.
Let me just go back to the tournament yesterday. And watching it, if I was Spieth and I went back to my hotel room, I would have fired my caddy as soon as I got back to the hotel room. He was telling him on the 18th, a par 5 with a 2-shot lead. Spieth asked him directly, does this 3-wood going for the green put 6 into play? And the caddy goes, no. There was a winding, snaking creek all the way up to the green. What the hell was that caddy thinking? He could have hit like an elite punch-out 7-iron down the fairway. Like a 150-yard little punch shot. That's all he... And the caddy was telling him to hit the 3-wood. I'm like, what are you doing? And then he skank-balled some 8-iron left, and it was like, what?
He held on for dear life. Like, it was scary there. But I will say, he's been playing that course a lot, and it's the Sunday. Like, it's not like he's unaware of what's ahead of him on 18. Like, I hear what you're saying. He's looking for some sort of support. But at some point, it's got to be on the player to say, I'm not taking this 3-wood out.
That's what he did. He goes, it's an 8-iron all day.
Yeah.
I don't know if you watched it live, but he goes, this is an 8-iron shot. I'm not hitting that 3-wood. Usually, it's the other way around, where the caddy says, get that 3-wood out of your hands.
Right. And then the player basically obviously has the trump card. But I hear you. I hear what you're saying. But listen, at the end of the day, he's back in the winner's circle for the first time in over 1,300 days, almost 4 years since he last won a tournament. And there were times where it felt like this guy, forget winning a tournament, he couldn't make cuts. Like, it was really ugly. This guy was showing up at – last year he was showing up at major tournaments and he was 3-4 over missing cuts. But now he is coming in hot at Augusta.
Yeah.
Like, he is the story of the week.
And don't forget, what is it, four or five times he's been in contention ever since Phoenix. Phoenix Open, he's been up at the leaderboard. Pebble Beach, he was up at the leaderboard. Yeah.
Yep.
So he could be dialed in, man. He's going to be definitely a guy to watch this week for sure.
I'm telling you, Vegas is their money's pouring in on Spieth, which scares me a little bit because, again, I don't see him after 4 years going back to back on tour. But it's a weird tournament this year because John Rahm had his son. Shout out to Rahm and his wife. So he'll be there. But is he going to be inspired? Is he going to be distracted? Where's his game at? Koepka's playing. He just had surgery a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
So what do we make of Koepka going? What do we make of Rahm, Spieth? There's a lot to digest here. And at the top of it, you just got the guy who dummied this course 5 months ago, who's still in pretty good form, in Dustin Johnson. And he's healthy. He's playing well. His swing is there. So we'll tee that up all throughout the week. Race coming up in the next hour. Marcellus Wiley as well. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2.